Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. When he was just 27 years old, Roland Fryer had already made a big impression on Harvard scholar Henry Louis Gates, Jr. Gates told the New York Times that Fryer was destined to be a star. Then he added, "He's a star already, just a baby star."
Today, the MacArthur Foundation did its part to bump Fryer from baby star to full star status. Fryer was awarded one of the $500,000 MacArthur Genius Grants for his work. He is a professor of economics at Harvard University, where his research has focused on educational innovation and racial inequality. And he joins us now. Professor Fryer, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
So that quote we read from Professor Henry Louis Gates was given when you were 27. You're 34 years old now. So from one mid-30-something to another, congratulations.
Thank you.
Let me ask you. Here's what the MacArthur Foundation has to say about your research. It focuses so much on using the scientific method in economics when it comes to studying racial disparities in America. They say that your studies, among many others, demonstrate your propensity to tackle difficult, often sensitive social questions with scientific rigor. The research is informing the work of academics and policymakers alike, and you are playing a singular and influential role in ongoing discussions about the effect of racial differences in America. Now, that's a pretty broad set of accolades for you. Is that how you see your research, you know, infecting or affecting, I should say, the conversation about race in the United States?
I actually don't. I'm very grateful to the MacArthur Foundation for saying such nice words, but I feel more like a wave in an ocean than being singularly influential.
Okay, well, let's talk about what your particular wave is in this ocean.
Sure.
I mean, you've done very provocative research. In part, for example, you've recently done a big study where you looked at financial incentives for students and whether that actually helps them do better in school, essentially paying for good grades. What did you find?
Right. Well, we found something quite interesting, I believe. When you pay for particular behavior, so if you pay a student to read a book or you pay them to come to school and behave, it actually ends up having an indirect effect on their actual achievement in school. However, if you pay them directly for the achievement, we found no results. And part of it in talking to the students was because when you paid them for the behaviors, they knew exactly what to do. They read a book, they got $2, and that had a resulting effect on their reading comprehension. When you paid them to get high test scores, they were excited, but they just didn't know what the next step was.
Oh, interesting. And this was a study that involved 20,000 students from some 200 schools?
Yeah, we spent about $10 million of private money doing this experiment, which was really, really a lot of fun.
So what is it that bringing sort of scientific methodology to economics has allowed you to uncover that standard economic theory and practice hadn't in the past?
Well, I think something like what we just described, which is, you know, standard, many economic models assume that people know how to produce things. So incentives are really great when people are lazy, but it's not clear they're that great when they're incompetent. So if they don't know what to do, you know, paying them incentives may not have an effect. For example, I'm not trying to say anything about your math skills. I really love the show. I'm just saying if I were to pay you $5 million to solve the Riemannian hypothesis, I'm pretty sure you'd be excited about it, but I'm not sure you could do it.
I can tell you I probably could not.
Perfect. Thank you. Because if you do, I'm really in trouble.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, the another major arm of your research has to do with the achievement gap between minority and white students, specifically black students.
Yes.
And one of your, early studies found this really, I think, remarkable thing that after controlling for background characteristics, black and white children actually enter kindergarten at parity or basically at equal ability, but then the gap starts showing up pretty early and gets ever wider with every year that they're in school. Now, first of all, I mean, there's long been this thought that the gap begins even before kids enter kindergarten. So that your theory, your research has kind of turned that on its head.
Well, that gap can be overcome, but you know, I believe it was Horace Mann that said school was the great equalizer, and we kind of found the opposite, that you know, you could kind of account for the gaps when kids enter school, but as you said, they get, as the kids age, they grow steadily and steadily over time. And we believe that school quality had a lot to do with that. I mean, unfortunately, I love my country, but in this country, your zip code really is highly predictive of the quality of school you're going to go to. And my work in the last 5 years has been all about trying to make that an aspect of history, trying to make it such that no matter where you're from, no matter your color, no matter your zip code, you can get access to a quality education in America. So we're trying to figure that out. And you know, the MacArthur Fellowship is a great fellowship to be able to explore avenues to that goal.
Well, I want to ask you in a moment what you're going to do with the money, because there's no strings attached when they give you the grant, and that's wonderful. Yeah. But you know, before that, you know, you were 27 when you caught the eye of a lot of people. You're only 34 now. Your background itself is worthy of a lot of conversation. You graduated from college in just 2.5 years?
Yes, I did.
So humble. I can do that math. It took me way longer than 2.5 years. But let me tell us a little bit more about where you came from. I mean, your interest in racial disparity and specifically how it manifests itself in education didn't come from anywhere.
Yeah, no, I grew up in very humble means. My grandmother helped raise me. I didn't meet my mother until I was about 20, 22 or so. And so I've just been, for the first part of my life, I was surrounded by people who I thought had enormous potential, but it didn't work out for them for whatever reason, bad education, you know, uninvolved parents, you can name it. So I've really, really been interested in unlocking the potential of students across America. I mean, when I first got to Harvard, I'll just be very frank with you, that people would say to me, oh, it's great that, you know, you beat the odds. And I would, you know, kind of halfway smile. But inside I was thinking, yeah, but can't we just change the odds? You know, it's just not okay to have a few people a year who, quote, beat the odds. And so my work has been about, I'm not sure it's been effective, but my work has been about changing the odds for kids across the country.
Have you, I mean, this is such a complicated question, but do you have a couple thoughts on key things that could be changing the odds that policymakers right now are just not looking at?
Oh, yeah. It's a quality education for every kid. And it's not that the policymakers aren't looking at it. They all get it. The question, and I'm sure that I'm going to receive a lot of phone calls about this, but I'm going to say it anyway, is that I'm not sure we have the stomach to do what we know is right. I mean, you know, the politics is what's getting in the way, I think, not what we should try next in terms of education reform in America. I mean, you've got lots of vested interest on both sides of this issue, and we just can't see our way clear to do what's right for children.
What do you mean specifically by we don't have the stomach for it?
Okay, well, you know, if a teacher's not ineffective, maybe we ought to remove them quickly. I'm not sure that's a very popular thing to do, but, you know, my grandmother's an educator for 35 years. She was a teacher. She would, you know, if I told her that was the solution, she would say, they pay you for that? I mean, it's just so obvious to her that, you know, effective, you know, more time in school with more effective teachers would go a long ways towards towards equalizing education in America. And it's a shame, I think, that we can't, or it's very difficult for us to try that experiment.
You mentioned an ocean of research beforehand. I see minds bobbing up in that ocean already when you're talking about, for example, teacher performance and how we hire and fire them. So I'll leave it at that. But let me close by just asking you, it is a $500,000 grant that the MacArthur Foundation has given you to do,
yes,
with As You Please. How do you plan on spending the year as a fellow and the money for your ongoing research?
I don't have the specifics nailed down just yet. I'm still in a bit of shock. I just heard a few days ago as well. But it will be in this general area of, we have to find a scalable solution for the racial achievement gap in America. I mean, we have specific examples. There are schools out there that have shown it can be done, but we haven't bottled that in a way that can be spread for all the 15 million kids across America who are reading below grade level. So it'll be used to help me down that path. And so We'll see what comes. I can't wait to see what Skip says in seven more years.
Skip Gates. Well, you are listening to now the official MacArthur Genius, Professor Roland Fryer. He's a professor of economics at Harvard University and one of the recipients of the 2011 MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant. Professor Fryer, congratulations and thank you again so much.
Thank you very much.
Stay with us. Up next, Walmart has built big box stores all over suburban America. But now they want to bring the discount department store to the inner city. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.